I'm going to call the Senate Special Committee on Oil and Gas to order. It is Tuesday, March 27th, 5:21 p.m. And at the moment, we have President Senator Halford, myself, Senator Pierce, Chairwoman. First today, we had three university-related people who did not have an opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 421, which sets up the Hazardous Substance Spill Technology Review Commission. That's Senator Szymanski's bill. That bill in its entirety has been rolled into the working draft for Senate Bill 503, and the is now called a council, so we won't have two commissions to try to keep track of. But all of the responsibilities of that commission under Senator Szymanski's bills have been rolled into this as a part of the CIRCA commission. So we're going to go ahead and take testimony from David Shaw with the Institute of Marine Sciences, who's with us online from Fairbanks. Also with, I'm afraid I'm going to get this name incorrect, Sal Kukurisi from Anchorage. And the third person that we had set up to talk was Mr. Tumio. I don't know if we have him online yet. Mr. Dr. Shaw, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Would you please go ahead and give
us... Yes, I am.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, could we please go ahead and have your testimony now?
Yes, I'm online. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Dr. Shaw, can you hear me?
We can hear you. Mr. Shaw, can you hear me?
Very loud and clear in Anchorage. Please stand by and have your broadcast. Thank you, Anchorage.
Mm-hmm. Just talk to us.
Who's on the other end?
Dr. Shaw from Fairbanks. Dr. Shaw, can you hear me? Apparently we have problems with the bridge to Fairbanks. Fairbanks is not able to hear me while the teleconference folks try to fix that problem. Sal, can you hear me in Anchorage? Is it my mic?
Would you like me to go ahead and testify?
Sure.
Yes, why don't you ask me to
try changing this?
What's 421?
Szymanski's.
My name is David Shaw. I'm a professor of marine science and chemistry at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. I'd like to speak to the Hazardous Substance Spill Technology Review Council, as it's now proposed in SB 503. I support the creation of this council. I believe it's important for the state to establish a mechanism for obtaining high-quality technical advice related to the prevention, mitigation, cleanup, and effects of hazardous materials. I strongly support the broad range of duties proposed for the council. For instance, I think the state would benefit from technical analysis of policy options related to beach cleanup. This would include, but go far beyond, establishment of test criteria for proposed cleaning agents and methods. At the present time, there are no generally agreed upon scientific goals for cleanup or a clear criteria for evaluating when those goals have been reached. In this situation, it is entirely possible that the best cleanup methods available will result in overall environmental harm. This has in fact occurred in previous spills. The proposed council could examine these complex and difficult questions before another spill. I also strongly support recommendation 57 of the Oil Spill Commission report, which calls for the creation of an oil spill research institute within the University of Alaska. Important steps have already been taken in the area of oil spill research by the federal government and the Cordova Science Center. However, the state needs for focused oil spill research are greater than these entities can be expected to provide. The state needs research about possible spills in Arctic sea ice, on tundra, on frozen rivers, and numerous other types of aquatic and terrestrial environments all around the state. The university has already formulated a plan to harness existing oil spill research talent to address this need with a minimum of new administration. legislative support and funding, the university's oil spill research center could quickly become a productive reality.
Don't forget now, folks, that we've got our fans are going to be funding a Cordova Science Center with a lot of bucks here in the next 10 years.
What?
The feds are going to be funding a Cordova Science Center with about 25 million bucks over the next 10 years.
Right.
So, it is a turf fight. Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, the university wants a separate school research center.
Which we haven't made.
But we don't have to because the feds have got it as an employer. So, I guess my point is that takes care of that particular recommendation.
Not that I know.
All right, back.
Could you ask Fairbanks if they can hear us now?
Fairbanks, can you hear us? Fairbanks, can you hear us? Cheers.
No.
Why don't you do this? If we're having this much trouble trying to hear them and them hear us, have the bridge work on it. In the meantime, we'll go on to the other two bills. You want me to try once more? Fairbanks, can you read us?
We can hear you now.
Okay. Dr. Shaw, was that the end of your testimony? Fairbanks, can you still read? Okay. Okay, they can tell Fairbanks that we just can't hear them.
Hello?
I guess I'll look at that. Okay, we now have with us also Senator Fisher. Senator Kelly has joined us. We're going to go into discussion and testimony on the CSs that we have for discussion purposes, Senate Bills 503 and 468. Senate Bill 468 is Senator Halford's bill that took recommendations of the Oil Spill Commission and proposes to put them into statute. Senate Bill 503 is the one of the two governor's bills that came into our committee that sets up the Alaska State Emergency Response Commission. And we have rolled Senate Bill 421, which sets up the Hazardous Substance Spill Technology Review Commission, into the full commission as a council, as a subcommittee of that entity. We'll be taking testimony on both of these bills. These are, as I say, CSs for discussion purposes. We hope to come up with some conclusions by the committee this evening of direction we'd like to go, have new CSs, if necessary, ready for Thursday evening's meetings, and we'd like to move the bills on Thursday. We are awaiting from Department of Environmental Conservation. I just received today one of the pieces of paper we were waiting on Senate Bill 504, which is a discussion of inspections. I haven't had a chance to read that yet. We'll provide that to the full committee. We are also awaiting what I understand, what staff was told by Gail Gatton, are going to be some proposed amendments to Senate Bill 504, either in a sponsor substitute form or some form that the administration is putting forth, and we haven't seen those yet.
I haven't seen.
Okay, we don't have those yet. We will not be bringing 504 before the committee again until we have seen those amendments from the administration. Senator Halford, would you like to make any further comments on your Senate Bill 468, or would you like us to go directly ahead with administration testimony?
You just go ahead.
All right. There is one amendment in your packet, Lauterbach 327. It's an amendment 4503 on page 3. It changes the designation from environmental conservation to military and veterans affairs. In drafting these to make 503 consistent with Senator Halford's 468, we moved the commission itself would be set up within the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, but due to a drafting error, I thought I said 503, did I not? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, to Senate Bill 503. Due to a drafting error, just because we didn't catch it, we did not change that citation. Philosophical question between the committee members and the administration, I know, and whether the commission should be set up in DEC or Military and Veterans Affairs, and I expect that we'll be, I know we're going to be hearing about that from Amy and others this evening. So I don't have the sign-up sheet, but obviously, who is going to testify for the administration? I see both Mr. Lloyd and Amy. Do you both want to come forward, or do you want to come forward separately, or? Great. That's fine. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Try talking into the microphones. I don't know whether they're hearing us or not.
For the record, my name is Denby Lloyd. I'm Governor Cooper's Special Assistant for Natural Resources. And with me is Amy Kyle, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation. Madam Chair, I just want to make some brief initial comments on the bills in front of you and leave the majority of the testimony to Amy to deal with some of the details in the bills themselves. But as I've addressed to you before, part of the purpose of the administration bills presented in response to the oil spill was to clarify the roles of the Division of Emergency Services and the Department of Environmental Conservation. Previous statute, in fact, an existing statute, there is a shift of responsibility from the Division of Emergency Services to DEC in case a declared disaster emergency is, in fact, caused by an oil spill. The administration bills sought to correct that by returning to the Division of Emergency Services the authorities that are theirs for any other type of declared emergency disaster. However, the administration did want to keep clear the respective roles of DES and DEC, recognizing that DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation, is the recognized expert in oil spill technology, planning, that being contingency planning and response. DES, the Division of Emergency Services, is a recognized expert in mobilizing personnel, communications, logistics, and helping people respond basically to a disaster that has already happened. And I think that's critical to your consideration here, Madam Chairman, that an oil spill, even if it is of catastrophic proportions, is inherently different than most other natural or other types of disasters that the state faces. A volcanic eruption, Mount Redoubt notwithstanding, is usually a single event. Flooding usually happens at a contracted point in time. However, an oil spill, as we've seen with the Exxon Valdez episode, can go on and on and requires a specialized expertise to deal with the oil spill cleanup itself, in addition to the other types of emergency actions required of state agencies. We have sought to retain within DEC their authority to deal within their expertise addressing oil spill cleanup and contingency planning while assuring that we have full assistance and authority under the Division of Emergency Services for them to assist with logistics, communication, and other aspects of human needs during a declared disaster. We do believe that this distinction of authorities and responsibilities is very important, and notice that there would be quite a bit of confusion not only in how people react to an oil spill, but also in the day-to-day regulatory functions of DEC, if some of the changes proposed in these committee substitutes were, in fact, enacted. They tend to confuse the role of DEC in their oil spill contingency planning authorities. And although I can't address the details of all those, I think in general what has happened in some of the drafting is taking some of DEC's authorities, even in non-disaster emergencies, and place them within the Division of Emergency Services where we do not have trained oil spill contingency planners or response personnel. That's the end of my comments, Madam Chairman. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, I'll turn my testimony over to Deputy Commissioner Kyle.
Senator Halpin.
And then Senator Kelly.
Yeah, I can't let this go by. You said DEC is a recognized expert in oil spill response. It seems to me that what went on last year was not the work of a recognized expert in anything.
Well, that's an interesting, Madam Chairman, that's an interesting comment. Perhaps it's more appropriately addressed to the people who were responsible for the response, and those are the oil companies. Now, DEC spent quite a bit of time and effort trying to make sure that the state could do what they could to assist those companies and the federal unseen coordinator. And again, some of those details are better placed with Ms. Kyle. But to lay blame for all the performance in the response last year with DEC is inappropriate.
Well, Madam Chair.
Let Senator Halpin go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with that. All the blame shouldn't go with DEC. All the blame shouldn't go in any particular place. There is adequate blame to go all the way around. I just had to respond to the statement that DEC is a recognized expert in oil spill response. I think our experience is short and far from positive.
Well,
Senator,
Madam Chair, I wrote that same statement down myself. It kind of picked up my ears, too. But even if you assume, and even if you say, well, you know, they didn't have the personnel and the funding to get the expertise in this area prior to the Exxon Valdez, and that's as much a responsibility of the legislature as anything else. The point is that now we are going to fund these positions, and the Oil Spill Commission, as far as I read their report, feels that those positions should be within Department of Emergency Services rather than Department of Environmental Conservation. And the Department of Emergency Service is going to have recognized experts in oil spill contingency and planning, because that's what we're going to be paying for if we move the Oil Spill Response Office to DES. I mean, it seems to me that the administration's position is significantly different from the Alaska Oil Spills Commission on this matter.
Well, Madam Chairman, the administration took the tack that under declared emergencies that there is a very important role for the Division of Emergency Services. But we also recognize that there are many instances where oil spills are not of catastrophic proportions. And we have already within DEC a staff that has participated in contingency planning and that has also helped various entities respond to those spills. And we wanted to maintain the distinction of having emergency services deal with declared disasters, but retaining within the Department of Environmental Conservation the pollution and pollution control aspects of day-to-day life, basically.
Any other questions, Senator Kelly?
Oops.
Senator Fisher, do you have any questions?
No.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Well, let's go ahead with whoops. He left you, Amy. Let's go ahead with Amy, with your testimony. What we're sitting here looking at is Dennis Dooley's December 1989 comparison of organizational strengths and weaknesses, which I think is part of what the Spill Commission used in making their recommendations. And part of it, which I will quickly kind of read into the record here that pertains to Senator Halford's question, is that in the paper, Mr. Dooley wrote, what expertise is required in the development of a response to an oil spill which is unique from other emergencies? And the answer was surprising. There is nothing in oil spill expertise that distinguishes it from weather expertise, chemical expertise, or unusual architectural expertise. When it comes to quickly incorporating such knowledge into a professionally trained and managed emergency corps, that's on page 6 if you're at the bottom if you're looking for it. Oil spill expertise cannot be ignored, but for the most part, it is not the critical knowledge upon which effective response is built. Rather, it is the effectiveness in preparation and management dealing with unscheduled events. And that's, I know, part of what Senator Halford was responding to in going ahead and introducing 468. And Amy, if you don't have a copy, we can certainly provide that to you. But why don't you go ahead and begin your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess I'd like to start with just a couple of general observations and then talk specifically about the bills, if that would be appropriate. I think everyone recognizes the need to improve the state's preparedness overall. You know, I think the department recognizes that, the governor recognizes that, certainly the legislature has shown that they recognize that, and it seems that it's going to require some continued work with all the parties participating here to make that happen. In looking at the bills, there's themes there that we endorse and share and that we support, and I wanted to start with those because I think there are a lot of ideas here that everyone is in agreement on. One is that it is very important to define the proper role for the Division of Emergency Services that allows everyone to take advantage of the strengths that they have in logistics, communications, and so on. We support that. I know the governor supports that, and it's in the best interest of everyone to make that happen. We have, as Denby mentioned, proposed in the governor's bill to repeal the language that currently restricts the authority of the Division of Emergency Services during oil spill-related disasters. And we do that wholeheartedly. We want emergency services to be able to play its normal role in managing the disaster-related aspects. Secondly, we recognize the need for a specified process to look at technology and approve it, as has been incorporated in this bill from Senator Zemanski's bill. We appreciate the need to do that, and we want to work with the legislature on a way to do it. A third item I would note is that we believe that there's a strong need for an enhanced local role in the response. We need to recognize the need for resources and support at the local level. We as an agency value the contribution that the local MAC groups and local governments have made to the response to date. We want to institutionalize that as we work on preparedness. And a fourth point is that we support using an incident command structure in spill response. We think that is very appropriate. We see models that have been developed for the Division of Forestry that incorporate an incident command structure, and we see that as a very positive thing to do in improving the state's response. As we develop this, I think that one point that's very important to keep in mind is that a state response to an oil spill has several regulatory aspects that go beyond logistics or communications and so on. The state has regulations for contingency plans. The state has regulatory authority to actually approve those plans. The state has a regulatory role in directing and approving cleanup processes and techniques and in making decisions about the response that both serve to direct the ongoing response. They serve to interact with the federal on-scene coordinator and the federal structure, and that all have ramifications for the state's ultimate ability to pursue damages and penalties. The regulatory aspects of the response, I think, have perhaps not gotten as much attention as they deserve. They're the aspects that are closely related with other of our authorities and that we need to keep in mind as we design the system.
Amy, can I break in and ask a question there? You and I had this discussion earlier, but I'd like to have it for the record and for the edification of the other senators. As I understand it, moving the response corps over to emergency services would cripple, for lack of a better term, DEC's ability to respond to the smaller scale non-disasters. Can you tell us who, was there no one doing that planning before we passed 264 last year, 261 last year? Is that a fair statement, that you didn't have people within the department doing that? So I know, because we created that response office last year, and I understand that that's one of your concerns. Can you share with us what you were talking about earlier today?
Yes, Madam Chairman. Last year, the legislature passed authority for the department to do statewide and regional contingency planning for oil and hazardous substance response that allowed us to look at all of the resources potentially available for a response and also define the role of all of the parties that may be involved. The state had never had that kind of comprehensive authority for planning before. There was a state response plan that primarily governed the state agencies, but there was never an authority that integrated the various types of response. The legislation passed last year also created the response office as a focal point for a state response team, and the state had never created a response team type approach to spill response before. We had always relied upon people who had other duties, essentially leaving those duties and going to a spill event, even as we recognized that approach was not the best one. The response office established last year gave the state both a repository for technical expertise, capacity to conduct drills and exercises to test response capability, and the capability to have a essentially pre-established response capability for spills. And those things had not existed before that. We felt that those were very important steps forward for the state. Our concern about the legislation is that it simply transfers all of those functions and their associated authorities out of DEC into the Division of Emergency Services. And I guess the best way to explain our concern about that is that we have a responsibility to respond at the appropriate level to all oil spills. There are thousands of oil spills in the state every year. And the best response is the one that makes sense for that spill. So if you have a small spill, you would have a local response with the facility responding, and we would hope the local response corps or MAC group responding if the other parts of this legislation are enacted, as well as our local rep. So if there's a small spill, say in Cook Inlet somewhere, we would see a response from the facility, from the local DEC office, and we would hope the appropriate local response, as I say, if the other parts of this legislation are enacted. If the response needs to be larger and it goes to a regional level, we need to have to plan to escalate that response, bring in regional level resources from the response office, from any regional response organization on the part of the industry, and regional level government if there is one. And then if that is exceeded, you get to a state level or disaster type response, as we saw in the Exxon Valdez, which ultimately became a national level response. Our concern is that we have responsibilities from both a regulatory and a response perspective at all of these levels, and we need to have a system that can work for all of these levels. And our concern with the drafts that are before you is that we simply take whole chunks of DEC authorities out of DEC, even as they may pertain to response capability at any of these levels. We take the planning that integrates the facility or private plans with the state and the local response, we just take that stuff out, and it leaves us, frankly, at quite a loss as to what we would then do. There are ancillary authorities associated with the response office, and there are, it's just a very strong question of what the intent would be, given that the response office was created as the focal point for an overall state response and as a focal point for the planning. That's basically what our concern is. We're out responding to spills every day, and they're, in some respects, someone used the word unscheduled events. In a way, they're scheduled. I mean, they happen all the time. And we need to be able to have an overall system that is responsive to those.
Senator Halfner.
Well, it seems like there's three levels of response there. It seems like there's a spill response, and then an emergency spill response, and a disaster spill response. And you used three sets of terms as you went through. I don't think there's any question about DEC dealing with spill responses and small spills. But I think if they are emergency responses or disaster responses, then I look at it. If a fire marshal goes to the building to see if it should be inspected, pass the test, go through the whole system. But the fire marshal doesn't run the fire department. The fire marshal is really separated from the fire department. The fire department does the emergency response and puts out the fire. The fire marshal goes back and investigates, may charge somebody, cooperates with the police if they're looking for arson, any other things. But the functions work together, but there's somebody different in charge. When the fire is burning and there is danger to life and property right then, the head of the fire department is in charge. The fire marshal is not. As soon as that time is passed, the fire marshal is back in charge again. And it seems like that's a logical parallel for the differences in DEC and DES in the response.
Madam Chairman, if I might respond to that. I think that two points. One is that, yes, I did describe three levels of response using slightly different terminology, but I think there are three levels of response, and we could call them whatever we all want to. The second point is that the analogy of the firefighters applies in some respects, in that it is DEC's role to set the standards for the facility contingency plans. If all of this legislation passed, all of the other rulemaking and oversight roles, though, would be moved out of DEC. So even under that analogy, I think that the bills proposed take a lot of functions away from the equivalent of the fire marshal. But even using that analogy, from our perspective, the functions of DEC that analogy doesn't include are the need for an ongoing state direction to the response, vis-a-vis the regional response team, the federal on-scene coordinator, and the direction to the responsible party. Because unlike a fire, where it's not the responsible party's job to go out and put out the fire, you know, it's the fire department's job solely. There's not another entity that has a role in dealing with the fire. In the case of an oil spill, you very often do have a responsible party, the spiller, the transporter, or whomever, who is responsible for the response to the spill until such time as the state or federal government take over that response. And the state has a regulatory and legal oversight role with regard to that responsible party that can't be done from Anchorage. It has got to be done on the scene. And the whole structure of the regional response team, the federal on-scene coordinator, the state on-scene coordinator is designed to provide that kind of ongoing direction to the response that's needed to make the decisions that have to be made every day and even every hour as some of these spills go on. So I guess I would say I think that the analogy is correct in terms of some of the prescriptive standards that the department needs to establish for planning and for response, though, as I say, I think some of these bills take some of those out of the department, even under that analogy. But secondly, that analogy doesn't provide the role of the on-scene coordinator, which is essential both legal and practically to the state's response and its legal position afterwards.
Senator Kelly?
Well, I mean, Amy's talking like we're doing away with our response. We're not. We're simply shifting it out of DEC to an incident command system that's already been established under DES. We're not doing away with any of the response. We're just moving it.
Amy, under the contingency planning process, which in all the facilities that have to do contingency plans, and I understand that not every facility has to do them and that you're working on sizes and so on and so forth, and not every opportunity for a spill out there is covered by a contingency plan, but would most of the local type spills that we're talking about, the smaller events versus emergencies or disasters, which would most of the smaller ones be covered by a contingency plan?
Madam Chairman, many, I don't know that you could, certainly most, but it might be more like 60% than 90%. There is, there are quite a few spills that are from unregulated facilities. And there are a lot of unregulated facilities from the contingency planning perspective. So there are quite a few where either the state or the Coast Guard has to step in if there's going to be an actual spill. Well, that's not to say correctly. There are quite a few where there's not a contingency plan. In many of those cases, the responsible party will still provide for a response.
Sure.
They'll just hire a contractor to go out and do whatever needs to be done. But there are quite a few. And if I might, I would like to respond for just a second to Senator Kelly's comment.
Mm-hmm.
With regard to the ICS system, as I mentioned in my earlier remarks, we support the ICS system. We know what it is, we see the benefits of it, and we want to adopt that. And I guess that our reading of how that should be done, though, in having reviewed all the ICS manuals and looked at the other models that exist in Alaska, is that it's the agency with the expertise and jurisdiction that is the incident commander, even under an ICS system. And there is a box for the logistics people, the planning people, the science people, and so on. And so an ICS system does provide a role for basically all of the resources and expertise that you can muster. But just as under the firefighting model, the Division of Forestry is the incident commander, and the Division of Emergency Services provides logistical support. Our view would be that under an incident command system, the agency with the technical and practical expertise in the spill response would be the incident commander, again seeking logistical support from emergency services and other support from any variety of other agencies. It seems to us it is very analogous to the relationship between the Division of Forestry and the Division of Emergency Services. And we have looked at a lot of their documentation, and we've talked to the people who do the training for ICS who are in the Division of Forestry. I guess it seems to us that the model is very applicable here.
Senator Halford, did you have any other comments on that point? Okay, do you want to continue?
Yes, Madam Chair. You've already taken me through a good chunk of my testimony, which I'm sure was your intention. So I'll briefly go through my general remarks here and then make some specific points about the bill. I guess our biggest concern about the package as presented is that it does appear to us that it undermines the state's legal capability to direct a response. I don't think that was the intent of any of the sponsors or drafters, and I'm sure that wasn't the intent, but as we try to sort out what gets left in DEC, what goes to DES, and how many things now are partly in each agency, it seems to us that it raises considerable questions about who's in charge and who's really responsible as the authorities and responsibilities become more fragmented. And we are extremely concerned about it from any kind of management or practical perspective of what we would do if we actually were in a position of trying to implement the legislation as drafted. Again, I know that it's not the intent of anyone to undermine the state's response capability, but only to enhance it. And I think the reason we have a different perspective is perhaps because we've gone into this in much more detail than the recommendation of the Oil Spill Commission, for example, which is fairly general. We've tried to get specific about how to actually deal with some of these issues, and as is our responsibility as one of the agencies involved here. And I guess I would just sum it up by saying it leaves us with an awful lot of questions about how this would work. It would appear that it would also compromise the state's independent authority to direct responsible parties and seek or impose any remedies or to decide when to step into a spill.
How, Amy, would you explain that further?
Yes, Madam Chairman. As it transfers the response office and the staff, the bills would also transfer the state's expertise in cleanup technology, the state's staff for performing drills, and the state's coordinating functions. Hence, even though DEC is left with the responsibility for facility contingency plans and presumably left with the interface with the Coast Guard under the Clean Water Act, as on-scene coordinator and in conjunction with the federal on-scene coordinator, the staffing and the infrastructure to support that and to provide the inputs from the other affected parties to that have been transferred. And frankly, I'm just not sure how we would deal with that. I mean, last year, a focal point for both the planning and response was created. Now it gets moved to a different agency, and yet some of the ancillary responsibilities are left with the department. It's hard to figure out how you would implement something like that. Perhaps it would be useful to look directly at the bill at this point in time for the CS for Senate Bill 468. In Section 1, in that subsection F, it transfers the Oil and Hazardous Substance Response Office all of the authority for statewide and regional contingency planning and prevention planning and a whole variety of related duties over to DES, but we still are left with DEC approving facility plans. Mm-hmm. Part of the reason for the statewide and regional planning was to integrate between the facility capability, the state capability, and the local capability, and this would seem to re-split that back out, leaving the management of that, in our opinion, somewhat difficult. that transferring the response office itself, which is defined in the statute as the heart of the state's technical capability and its also its authority to conduct drills over to DES, transfers the authority for drills also at private facilities, not just any drills under a regional or statewide plan. This section also removes the following section removes the state's emergency access and response authority in 4608-140, which allow the department to take steps to contain a spill or prevent a spill before you got to some kind of a disaster mode. And it strips out our emergency order authority as well that we use, for example, to take steps at Trick River to reduce the risk of a spill from the tanks there. That would all be the authority to implement any kind of emergency order would be switched over to DES. So, I mean, frankly, I'm not sure what the full effect of all of this would be. It's a little bit, it's hard for us to really figure out how to implement some of the divisions of responsibility here.
Amy, who had emergency powers before we passed 264 last year?
The department had emergency powers for...
And did section 4608-140 just change the language from last year? Do you remember?
I'm sorry, Madam Chairman, which section were you referring to?
Your emergency powers section that you're just speaking to, 4608-140. Last year, that was new language last year. Did we just move authority from... that you already had and put it into the response office but keep it within DEC?
The legislation last year in part moved some authority that we already had and also pulled together all the other authorities for response. I will have to look and see for that specific site whether that one was one that was moved or not. I'm not sure I can answer that without looking it up.
Okay, I'm just trying to figure out how your emergency powers worked before that new language last year. I think what we were primarily attempting to do was move that emergency response into the 470 fund and did so through the response office, but I don't know where your old authority was, but you can look at that.
I don't believe I have the documentation to answer that for you with me.
Did anyone have other questions on those points? Okay, would you like to continue, please?
Yes. Moving on to Section 5 of the bill, out of emergency authorities, this moves to DES the authority to provide for the coordination of response capability and separates out the authority for facility plans with the authority for overall response plans. I guess our concern about this is that we were intending through these plans to establish some ongoing relationships between the different parties that participate in the spill response that would include a capability to elevate the response depending on what was needed. And typically when you first go to a scene, you don't know if it's a big deal or a little deal. You know, when the first call came in from the Exxon Valdez, nobody knew if that was going to be a 3,000-gallon spill or the 11-million-gallon spill it turned out to be. So when you first get your call, you have to send somebody out to find out what's going on, assess the situation, and then call in the resources that are necessary to deal with whatever the situation is. And our concern about fragmenting that authority is that I'm not sure how you then provide for the appropriate escalation of the response as necessary. We want to integrate, or at least we would like to integrate, the local response core with the facility response at the local level as much as possible with a local response from our office and not tie in a statewide disaster or any other kind of statewide response for the local spills. To do that, we need to do planning that allows for a tiered escalation of the response. And when you separate these things out into different agencies, I'm not quite sure how that can be done.
When you're talking about local groups, you mean the local groups under CERC?
The local groups under CERC are the planning groups, and we would hope that as they complete their planning, they identify the local response entities so that there's both a local planning and a local response entity. Yes. And then in Section 6, again, the authority for regional planning is similarly split. The concerns are the same as they were for the statewide level. In Section 7, it basically authorizes the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs to tap the 470 fund for all of these costs, and there's no restrictions for that. So this basically puts the authority for the funding for spill response and the planning, and also in subpart B, containment, cleanup, and other necessary actions to address a release or threatened release of oil or hazardous substance that is within the jurisdiction of the Division of Emergency Services into Emergency Services. We're not completely sure where that line is then drawn between when they tap the fund for containment, cleanup, and other actions, when someone else would. In Section 8, it gives DES the authority to seek reimbursement of their costs. This is certainly appropriate if they're incurring their costs. We wonder whether it makes sense to set up a whole other department that has to go through the type of legal and other training and support necessary to support cost recovery and associated actions. It seems that there's quite a bit of, there will practically be a tremendous amount of duplication of expertise in order to recreate that capability in DES. And then Section 10 is the section that actually moves the response office itself. I've already spoken to that point, so I won't restate that. Basically, Section 11 and 12 also simply moves the authorities for response from DEC to DES. So those are some specific comments on the bill. Again, our overall comment is that it seems that the bill goes beyond the intent, as I've heard it stated, and it would certainly seem to pose some very real legal and practical issues in trying to divide up these responsibilities, even assuming that you want to recreate the kind of technical staff that we have in DEC and field staff that we have in DEC over in DES.
Okay. Before you go on to 503, Senator Halford, do you have any questions now for Amy, or do you want to wait until after she's had a chance to talk about the CERC commission, whichever you'd like? Okay, let's go ahead and do 503.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm looking at the 320-690 work draft of Senate Bill 503. Some of the issues raised in this bill are identical to the issues I just discussed, and I won't belabor it. I probably belabored it enough already. The first part, the first issue that I would want to comment on is the Hazardous Substance Spill Technology Review Council. We've previously testified that we think that the council is a good idea in that it could provide a mechanism to bring research about spill techniques and methods from the academic and research communities into the department, and also provide a forum for the state to advance its interests in seeing certain types of research conducted by federal funding entities and others. We've had quite a bit of conversation with the sponsor of the original Senate Bill 421 about the best administrative mechanisms to accomplish this, I guess I would just briefly summarize those concerns. First of all, we don't think it's a good idea to repeal DEC's ability to enter into cooperative agreements and other agreements for research, simply in that there are some times when it's advantageous for the state to be able to participate in a multi-party project, such as, for example, the Tier 2 research on oil spill capability that's been done up on the North Slope. And so we would advise against repealing that separate authority and limiting the department's authority to take advantage of the kinds of projects that occasionally arise. We think it's appropriate for the council to have the authority to actively advocate for and recommend types of research projects that need to be done, to recommend testing protocols for technology to be approved by the state, and to maintain listings of approved cleanup techniques as developed by the department. We're uncertain about putting the Technology Council under the State Emergency Response Commission. We're not sure that there's a particular benefit to that, in that
The Response Commission is not a group that will be meeting every day, and it may simply slow down the pace of business to have the council report through the CERC, but that's a point that you all can discuss. I think those were our main points about the Technology Council. We see it as something that could be very beneficial to the department and other entities in the state in providing technical background to decisions about cleanup technology. I guess the second issue to comment upon in this bill is that in Section 9, I believe as amended, which is on page 3, the Emergency Response Commission is proposed to be moved into the Division of Emergency Services and to be chaired by the Division of Emergency Services. I think the administration's position is that it would be most appropriate to leave those functions with DEC, recognizing the department's lead role in spill prevention and cleanup for all the kinds of reasons that we've already talked about. We think that the mention of the incident command system in the statute here is a good addition to the bill, and have no problem with that. I don't know that it's necessary to specifically comment on all the issues we talked about earlier today, so I won't do that. So I think those are all the issues I needed to comment on in this bill. I appreciate the opportunity to testify here today.
Thank you very much, Amy. Any specific questions on the CS for 503 for Amy? Okay, Senator Halford, do you want to go ahead and ask Irv Martin your questions? I believe we have him on. It's my understanding that he's on teleconference.
Yeah, I'd kind of like to have, if he's listened through this, a response to the specific points brought up with regard to DEC versus DES capabilities under existing law and under the proposal.
Mr. Martin, can you hear us? Yes, sir, we can. It's my understanding that you've sporadically been able to hear us. Have you heard enough to be able to comment to Senator Halford's question?
Yes, ma'am,
Chair,
I can.
Yes, sir, please go ahead.
Requires the Division of Emergency Services to cooperate in achieving the purposes
Well, so you don't think that there is any problem in differentiating between the oil spill, the oil spill emergency, and the oil spill disaster, essentially. You think that's automatically provided for, and the real differentiation is already in the hands of DEC.
Mr. Martin, that's all the questions we have for you at this time. I hope you'll stay online with us.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Could you look at the sign-up sheet?
Okay. Amy, do you have any comments you'd like to add at this time?
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Who in the audience here would like to testify this evening? Just you, David? Okay. What I'd like to do then, I have some people on teleconference. It's my understanding people can hear us now. Dr. Shaw, we were able to hear your testimony, and no one had any questions for you if you are still there. However, I understand that in Fairbanks we also have Mark Tumio, and Mark, I hope I'm pronouncing your last name correctly, from the university's Office of Sponsored Programs, and I understand that you have testimony too concerning the Technology Council. Could you go ahead and give us that testimony now, please?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify. I was in attendance last Wednesday, and we had some mix-up, and we lost some of the Fairbanks testimony. What I would like to testify to is specifically the Oil Spill Technology Review Committee, as it's now called in the new bill. I would like to echo Professor Shaw's comments and strongly support the idea. I think there are a few issues that are germane to both the discussion of 503 and the committee substitute for 468. What I see personally is a division between the planning and preparedness aspect for a pollution event such as oil spill or any other spill. I think that planning and preparedness to prevent that is something that this committee could really work on. They could put together technologies and procedures in advance. They could say for treatment, this is an idea that's in and acceptable and will work. That kind of review is something that's really needed. We've seen that in this current spill event, that because we aren't what to do, even though there are things out there, we've not been prepared for that. I think that we could work very closely, the university, other research branches within the state, the Prince William Sound Center, Committee is an excellent idea. It would be very useful to the state, and I think that that would be best served within DEC. That's about all I would like to say right now. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to try and respond.
Thank you very much. There are no questions for you here, and I apologize, although I was not at last week's meeting, I apologize for the fact that all three of you ended up not able to testify.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's my understanding that we have other observers in Fairbanks, but no one else to testify. Is that correct?
No, it isn't. I believe there's one more person to testify.
Okay. Could we have whomever else is in Fairbanks come forward and please give us your name and then your testimony?
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Dick Jackson, and okay, I hold the button down. And I'm the Health and Safety Director for the Fairbanks North Star Borough. My particular problem and reason that I'm here to testify today is that the legislation that is before you is within my bailiwick to carry out in response to hazardous material incidents specifically. I deal with them on a daily basis. Within the past 24 hours, I've had to deal with an incident here in Fairbanks and continue to have that problem throughout our bureaucratic life up here. Particularly, my problem with the legislation, as I see it, I've not had a good deal of time to deal with it in a very specific area, but I support the legislation as we proposed, with one exception, and that is that we need to identify for the local areas, and in my case, the Fairbanks North Star Borough, the specific funding availabilities for carrying out the mandates. It's very difficult for us here to respond to hazardous material incidents, since presently we have not had any statutory authority except in our fire service districts. And we do have a major problem in the area of training and equipping the vehicle and that we have now. We do have a hazmat vehicle. And putting gas in the vehicle, quite frankly, you're not putting us in the poorhouse, but you're inching us along that way. We can do the job, we're willing to do the job, but we need assistance, particularly in the form of training monies and material for equipping the vehicles that we have. And I'm certainly available to answer any questions, and our Borough Assembly, as you're probably aware, has already supported this bill by resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Jackson. I have a question for you. As the Health and Safety Director, are you the Fairbanks North Star Borough's representative on the State Emergency Response Commission, the CERC group?
No, that's presently Mayor Helms, and I would expect that that would continue for the foreseeable future.
All right. It's my understanding, and I don't have a fiscal note in front of me, but from the earlier discussions that we had on the CERC, the local CERT groups would receive training money, and I remember the commissioner saying in terms of about $10,000 per local group for training dollars at that first committee hearing on 503 for each local emergency response commission. I understand that that's certainly not a huge amount of money, but I do know that DEC is working some training dollars into their fiscal notes. So you will have an opportunity to see those fiscal notes as we proceed through the process. But thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Okay, $10,000 isn't going to do much, I don't think, for us. But for instance, just the baseline physical requirements for the response group on a regional basis, we're budgeting $30,000 just for physicals for the people that may take the training. It gives you some idea of the involvement and the magnitude of the expenses that we're going to have to endure. So it's a major problem, and people we're training now are principally volunteer firemen, and you know, these people are doing it on their own hook for their community, and I think the state needs to come up to the line and handy up enough money to do the program adequately, and $10,000 is not enough. I'm sorry.
Okay, Mr. Jackson, thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it. Let's go to Anchorage now. I understand that, General Schaefer, you are online. Do you have any comments to add to Irv Martin's comments? And we appreciate your being here for us this evening.
Madam Chair, General Schaefer, no, I don't, but I'm standing here listening to what's going on.
Any questions for you?
What Irv Martin has told you, and
Senator Halford is trying to think of what's general.
I can't think of anybody but any questions, but thanks for being there.
Thank you.
I understand that we also have Mike Oden in Anchorage who would like to testify. Is that correct, Mr. Oden?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I would like to comment on both 503 and 468. I'll try to make some sense out of this. I have worked with Mr. Jackson on hazmat response for the last 5 years. And we started from nothing to where we were at. In 1988, we responded to approximately 300 hazardous materials incidents within the Fairbanks borough boundaries. Most of those were handled by the local responders and the fire departments. And I think there's a lot of information here about DEC people, personnel telling you about responding to, and actually what response means. Response means emergency response, immediate response right now. And several times I have said on the telephone on a Friday afternoon, even on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, trying to get assistance from DEC. And the comments were, it's not an emergency. It's just release. We will see you Monday morning. And that's happened numerous amounts of times. And what we need to define here is not only are we talking about oil, is we're talking about hazardous materials, hazardous substances, hazardous waste, and the things go on and on. Chlorine, a one-ton cylinder of chlorine can evacuate and kill half the people in Fairbanks, but it will not get a response from DEC. And that goes for ammonia, propane, butane, and a whole lot of other products. So when we're talking about response, we need to make sure that everyone understands what response is. Also, the people that respond to must be trained. As Mr. Jackson told you about the physical examination, very few of the DEC field reps have the specialized training for emergency response. And in fact, last year, some of those people were attending emergency response training seminars. None of those people that I know of have their physicals. None of them are in compliance with the current OSHA codes as we are required to be. So when we're talking about response, we need to clarify what everyone is going to do, what is hazardous materials, what is hazardous substances, and what's the role that everyone is going to play. And we deal with hazardous materials. Doesn't really matter if it's a hazardous substance by DEC's interpretation, if it's a hazardous waste by Environmental Protection Agency, if it's a hazardous material by the Department of Labor, it's going to hurt just the same. And our job as responders is to protect the community. We don't have time to wait 2, 3, 4 days for a response to get some assistance. We need the assistance right then and there. And so we totally agree with 503 and 468. I also might mention, I also chair the local emergency planning committee in Fairbanks. And some of the things that are coming up, it's quite extensive. We probably have the only working LEPC under the state commission. There's a couple of questions that I would have, but we can work those out later. We need funding to do what you have outlined for us to do, even though it's a federal mandate. There are two of us working as volunteers, even though that we are full-time people. One is a secretary for the borough and myself from the university, and it's taking a lot of our time doing this other work. And it takes a lot of work of receiving the Tier 2 forms, doing the planning, doing the release notification, receiving the release notifications, doing public notifications, and the list goes on and on. And the mandates are here, but I don't see the funding. And realistically, most of the work for 503 is put up on the LEPCs, and there's no money there. Very little of the work, once you get into Sarah Title III of the State Emergency Response Commission, the local emergency planning committees and planning districts, most of the work is on the LEPCs in the local and the districts, not on the CERT. However, most of the money right now, or in fact, all the money is going to the CERT. We need the money in the field so that we can do the work out in the field itself. And that's all that I would have to say.
you, Mr. Oden, now, so that I have this straight, although you are this evening testifying from Anchorage, you are the chair of the Fairbanks North Star Borough's Local Emergency Planning Committee. Am I correct in that?
That's correct. I'm down here at the conference and I got stuck.
Well, we're glad you got stuck because we're happy to hear from you this evening. Thank you very much. I hope you'll provide to the LIO your Fairbanks address and phone number for us, please.
Fairbanks phone number?
Yes, sir. If you'll just give that to the moderator there at the information office.
I'll do that. Thank you.
Thank you. I understand that in Soldotna we have Jim Butler from the Kenai Peninsula Borough observing. Jim, do you have anything that you want to add?
No, at this point, Senator, I'm just getting out to you to look at the language, and I'll try and draft some notes up and get with your staff and make some comments. We appreciate the opportunity and interest the committee taking in sorting out the proverbial question is that who's in charge.
Thank you, Jim. And I understand that you are working closely with all of the Cook Inlet entities to have what is actually probably another layer, at the very least another entity, to set up some Cook Inlet response. Is that correct?
Yes, Senator. I guess maybe not necessarily another layer, but we're trying to hit a couple of moving targets. Candidly, with working with studying some information at DES and talking to DEC, we're also monitoring the federal legislation to see where that might leave a region such as Cook Inlet for planning. But we're hoping to have some commitments on behalf of the industry and a clear understanding of the role of the borough might fulfill in trying to be an agent so the folks on the state level might have an integrated local emergency system within the borough they can contact depending upon what type of emergency is presented.
And am I correct that Kenai, you do have a local emergency planning commission set up under CERC, am I correct?
Senator, that is correct. We do have an LEPC that is currently qualified under the CERC, and they've been actively working on the charter process, identifying subcommittees to look at specific general areas that subcommittees can pursue further.
Great. Thank you very much, Jim. And last but not least, as far as sites online with people to testify, I have Kodiak, where I have both Bridget and Mike Milligan to testify. Whichever one of you would like to come first, please come ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Technology group there. I work for the Kodiak Island Borough.
Okay, and the Bureau has put together a response plan and has identified some technologies that you would like DEC to certify, is that correct? All right. Thank you. I understand that Mike Milligan would also like to testify from Kodiak. Mike, please come forward to the mic. And Tim Robertson, if you are still online in Sardinia,
yes,
I do know that you were aware there and that you wanted to comment, I believe, to the Resolution 83. But if you have comments to the bills we're talking about this evening, we'll go ahead and take those after we hear Mr. Milligan. Mr. Milligan?
Yes, I'm
going to
pass. Thank you.
You say I'll pass?
Mr. Milligan, did you say you would pass?
That's a roger, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you very much. Okay, and the other people in Kodiak, Mr. Roman, Mr. Scott, did either one of you want to testify? All right, we'll take silence for a negative. Is Tim Robertson with us in Saldovia?
To the branch, or was he at an LIO?
He called in from his own home or office or something.
To the bridge.
Yes.
Is there a way we can check with the bridge to
yes.
see if he deliberately cut off or if he fell off?
Okay, unless we get Mr. Robertson back from Saldovia, we have John Ringstead here in Juneau who'd like to testify from BP Exploration. In the meantime, if there are any information offices out there with people who would like to testify, would you please contact the teleconference moderator here at Juneau? Thank you.
John.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is John Ringstad. I represent BP Exploration. BP has previously testified on these bills, and I want to talk a little bit tonight on a subject that I don't think we've heard addressed too much on that, and that's the funding of a lot of these proposals. A significant part of this comes from the 470 or the nickel barrel fund. In backing up to look at that fund, basically it's funded by special appropriations, program receipts like the money from the Exxon Valdez, that sort of thing. Specific appropriations the legislature may put in there, but that rarely amounts to any significant money. Last year's 5 cents a barrel additional tax on oil production that goes in theoretically to have a pool of money there in case we have an oil spill or a disaster that needs to be addressed. That money, as projected at this point, will be starting out, obviously it is tied real closely to production levels, but starting out projected to be $27 million this year. There's a section in the front section of the budget bill that appropriates that $27 million from the general fund into this 470 fund. Now, once that, theoretically this was an oil spill fund, it's not obviously set up to be, intended to be a dedicated fund, but looking at how this really works, it appears that the fund is set up with the $27 million going in as a lump sum front end of the year. The statute gives a little bit of guidance, but not much. It's not, the statute is specifically not set up to be an oil spill fund. It's set up to be an oil and hazardous substance fund, which is substantially different than an oil spill fund, and basically is left at the discretion of the Commissioner of DEC. If you look at DEC's budget, the governor requested $21.5 million for the whole total department budget. Which I'm assuming somebody is fighting over that right now. At the same time, $27 million lump sum is just being said here, go ahead. With that as background, looking at these bills more specifically, one section of the bill that you have before you tonight gives the governor authority to use money out of that fund for declared disasters. Again, not oil disasters. Another portion of that bill transfers responsibility or authority to Division of Department of Military and Veterans Affairs for the Emergency Response Committee, the Technology Review Council, the Response Office, and the contingency planning process. Another section then will allow DEC, this is the existing part, staying with DEC, for investigation, containment, cleaning, restoring the environment, and other things that they deem necessary. And if you look at the list of what DEC is proposing at this point, they're proposing, part of that is for cleaning up salvage yards, cleaning up East Side Auto, I think, in Anchorage, cleaning up M&M Battery Shop, things that are totally unrelated to any effort for an oil spill fund. Additionally, SB 359, which I think you've already passed along and been working on, now that is set up to make money available for local governments in case of an emergency up to, I think it was $10 million is the way it went out of here. Now, the basic premise on that is there's got to be money in the fund. I think the question that really hasn't been dealt with anywhere in this is who prioritizes and how do they prioritize the use of that fund on the assumption that you've got limited money. Now, it appears that it's going to be a long time, if ever, that that fund actually gets to be a $50 million fund. And it also appears that in addition to what legislation you're dealing with here, there are numerous other proposals out there of trying to spend that money already. These bills that you're working on moves around who has authority to look at the way these bills are drafted. You have at least three different state officials that have the ability to go into that fund and take money with no specific appropriation. At that point, I think you wind up with not knowing or giving minimal, if any, direction as to what you want done with the money. One other question, I guess, from a specific industry and or BP position, it's hard to find the equity in BP paying or the industry paying an extra nickel a barrel for a so-called oil spill fund when you see it going out and cleaning up, responding to a lot of non-oil or non-crude oil specifically problems. It seems that the industry has no problem paying for its own industry and for its own companies for their own problems, but going out and paying for a lot of other things seems like there's not much equity in that. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Any questions for Mr. Ringstead? Senator Szymanski, we are on teleconference. Appreciate your
thank you. I appreciate your, first of all, I want to thank you for your comments and your observations, because I think that they're certainly valid in some areas, and I could clarify them in others. But the original fund was created by Representative Davis actually to deal with our Poppy Lane situation we had in Kenai, and deal with a similar type of hazardous substance type releases and or hazardous substance areas. And nobody at that time envisioned it to be a oil spill fund. Nobody envisioned the Exxon Valdez going on the rocks, but it did. It became the fund, and even as early as last year, creative thinkers were thinking about how to spend out of the fund. Senate President Kelly, as you know, passed a bill last year that created the four response centers and tapped the fund for them and all the other associated activities with them. But in each and every one of those cases, I think that those costs associated with response in dealing with the issue of oil spill cleanup have been policy calls that we've made as legislators and said, okay, if you're going to do it, whether it's an oil spill response commission or one of these other groups that you named, who should be the responsible party to pay for it? And I guess one question in my mind, I don't have any problem in having the industry paying for those. Now, with regard to the other activities that DEC has listed to be performed this year that they're doing, whether it's a battery cleanup site or something like that, they have fallen underneath the same statutory guidance that the fund has had since its creation, and that is that if the responsible parties don't do it, we do it and then sue them back for the money. We go after them. We go for the deep pocket. We go for the guy that's got the insurance company or the insurance that was there at some point in time, or we go back to Husky Batteries, or we go back to whoever it may be. And it could have been you guys if you'd been involved in it. But I don't think that you can isolate out. I think if you go back to each and every one of those cases, you don't, to the best of my knowledge, you don't see a concerted effort being used to use the oil company's contribution under the surcharge, and it's a very kind contribution as a surcharge that is there to go off and do things unrelated to the industry's activities. Now, they seem to be blossoming and growing because the Oil Spill Commission's report came out. And I am a little worried about it, but as you recognize, I had a different solution for that problem in at least one bill you mentioned, and that was I'd just soon add $25 million account to it. And I even suggested one time to the committee that we make it 10 cents a barrel if we have a problem in filling it up. I don't have a particular problem with that either. Is that what you're suggesting?
Madam Chair.
We're running out of money, and maybe we need to...
I'm not running out of money, just spending it
properly.
It's a matter of prioritizing your spending is what I'm trying to point out here. What was the purpose of the nickel a barrel? I was addressing the more the nickel a barrel portion of the fund as opposed to the initial when the fund was set up a couple of years ago. Last year's nickel a barrel was addressed at a different issue, and I think if you're going to have a fund there, you've got to not spend all the money every year in order to have a fund. That's what I think the purpose was. My other point was just that somewhere, somebody's got to sit down and say, who's in charge of the fund? Who says, when you've got two agencies or three agencies saying we need the money, and they all need $100, and there's only $50 sitting there, somebody's got to make the decision, and I'm not sure it's clear as to where that is, the way legislation sits now.
I think those are good observations. I think that we need to keep it consistent. So, at least from my perspective, I think we ought to keep it underneath DEC and keep the control there the way that it always has been. And somebody else wants to tamper, let them come to them.
But, well, in your own 359, it's not under DEC anymore. You're giving CNRA the authority to spend some money.
If you remember correctly, you did that. I didn't do that. It would have been DEC keeping theirs, and I would have had a separate fund.
How are you going to fund a separate fund out of that 470 fund?
That's right. I mean,
well, that's the same difference.
But I had a separate fund.
But it's still the 470 fund that we're talking about. It was those 5 cents a barrel.
I just...
Senator Halpert, do you have any questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Dave Parrish from Exxon.
What was our resolution?
I don't know.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dave Parrish with Exxon Company USA, and I'm here to testify briefly on committee substitute for Senate Bill 468 and committee substitute for Senate Bill 503. As we stated in prior testimony, Exxon supports improving the state's ability to efficiently respond.